ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
When we walk into a room and switch on the lights, we take what happens next for granted. In an instant, electricity is powering up not only those lights, but the computers, the air conditioning, TVs, and so much more. But as reliable as the power system is, and it is, storms happen. Ice and wind can bring down transmission lines. And meanwhile, our military faces a whole other set of challenges when it needs to establish a base in the middle of nowhere and reliable power systems are not available. What's the solution? Well, on this edition of UWM Today, we're going to talk to two UWM experts who are developing microgrids, systems that can deliver a range of power alternatives just in time and just where it's needed. Adele Nasiri is a professor and Rob Kuzner an associate professor, both in the Electrical Engineering Department at UWM's College of Engineering and Applied Sciences. And we welcome both of you to today's program. Adele, let's begin with you. Quick definition, what is an energy grid?
Utility grid was designed in early 1900s. And the idea behind that was that we would generate power in concentrated power plants, then transmit it to cities and to load centers with transmission lines, and then we bring the power to the customers. The idea has been to have reliable power, efficient and cheap for the customers. So this is really what he built. It's the biggest machine that we ever built, that human built. It's electric utility grid. So it spans across the country, across the world, and it's just a lot of pieces that come together to provide power to the customers. And at home, at industry, at commercial centers, everywhere.
And one of the problems with that big, expansive grid is that sometimes parts of it can go down, right?
Right. There are many, many reasons that a utility grid could go down. That could be failure in equipment. That could be a weather event. That could be a malicious event intrusion to the system. So for many reasons, the power could go down, to the customers. So that's where really one of the reasons behind the idea of microgrids. So microgrids, the idea that was if we can build electrical systems or we can provide electrical power to the customers, that the system could be more reliable, more efficient, and more flexible. So that's kind of drove the idea of microgrid.
Well, Rob, let's bring you into the conversation. When we think about these microgrids that you and Adele and others are in the process of developing, are these designed to plug into that bigger, broader electrical grid that Adele described covers the nation from coast to coast, or is it something else?
Yeah, the original definition of the microgrid was that it was to be an extension of the electrical grid. And it would be an opportunity to have to integrate local generation and even renewables and combine them together to meet to integrate the needs of the customer with maybe his own electrical sources that he has and with the grid. So the original microgrid really had the requirement of being able to be connected to the main grid.
As I hear you describe that microgrid, I'm thinking of those power generators that are being sold every time that you see there's going to be a hurricane headed down south. They talk about getting a generator for the home to plug in. This is very different from those very, very small instant remedies to a power line that goes down, isn't it?
Yeah, microgrid is a controlled mini electrical system. and it's it coordinates the generation and the distribution of the locally generated power with the grid generated power and with the loads that are locally on that microgrid.
So how many microgrids are out there? If the idea is that you're going to plug into the broader electrical grid network, are these common right now today in the country?
So the numbers are increasing at a big rate. And the reason is that the technology is maturing. You know, you and I talked about microgrids a few years ago. Back then, we were designing how you can build a microgrid, how you can just, you know, make the system and provide power. Now we are looking at how we can can make it more reliable and, you know, add smart to it or modify it for any reason to improve efficiency and reliability. But the technology is being matured. So military sites are, you know, one of them you mentioned early on. So the most military sites, they have, if they are disconnected from the grid or they are connected to a weak electric grid, they have a microgrid that provides power to any load within the system. Then there are now the systems, there are a few examples that there's a campus size, like hospital or a small campus that are built as a microgrid. Then and the difference is there, you have multiple electrical power generating sources. You have solar PV, you have wind. Solar PV is getting really affordable now. And you have energy storage, you have generator, you have a mix and match of a lot of sources and a lot of loads, and then that's where you build the system for a campus.
So the idea is that you actually could have a number of different energy sources powering that same microgrid. That's pretty cool, isn't it, to imagine that you might be using solar alongside diesel? Mm-hmm. Are these more expensive to build because you have multiple different ways of fueling the system?
Yeah, I think that this is really where the distribution part comes in, and a lot of people may not understand what we're talking about when we say distribution, but it's how do you send the energy from one point to another, and now you have a system that's very interconnected, very complex, and it's very different from our present electrical grid, and the distribution is different. And I think people have assumed in the beginning that you could just plug and play, buy solar inverters and solar systems and buy an energy storage system, natural gas generator, and then you plug these together and they'll all work. But I think what people are finding out is that it's a rather complex system to manage, and especially because another requirement of a microgrid is that it needs to be able to operate in an island mode where if the main utility goes down. Now what you have is you have all of these sources together, and they've all got to coordinate with each other, and especially if something goes wrong inside of the microgrid itself, it's going to behave very differently than when it was connected to the grid.
We're using the word micro, which suggests small, but you also mentioned it could be fueling a hospital campus. You know, these are like small cities in themselves. How big can a microgrid be and still be a microgrid?
So a microgrid could be a house, as small as a house, could be a city. So it really depends on how much resources you have as generation, electrical power distribution, and the load. So you can design it as big. The bigger it gets, it becomes more complex to control. The easiest one is really a small house.
Yeah. So here in Wisconsin, do we have examples of microgrids that are up and operating?
There is one example, a microgrid at the Nature Preserve Center up north that I visited, and it was really a great facility. And one thing that they have done, and these are really benefits of microgrids, that when you have your controls at the lowest level, now you can integrate the electrical system with the cooling and thermal system. So that's what they have done. And doing that, you can increase the system efficiency significantly, because a lot of electrical generating devices, they produce heat, and you can use that heat for space heating. Or, you know, you can come up with really a nice and complex system that caters to both electrical and thermal loads. And then that becomes a very efficient system. So you can, and they have done that work, and it's a really great demonstration site.
If somebody is sitting at home right now and thinking about how they could reduce their energy bills, how they could become more sustainable in terms of their energy use, is a microgrid practical at a residential level?
Well, I did some work in this area, and it's starting to gain some momentum, the idea of, say, a residential microgrid. I mean, community microgrids is really very similar to what Dr. Nasiri was talking about, where a community owns. But the issue is that one of the big things that we have to get through is who owns everything and who is responsible for the operation and the maintenance. So it's a little bit more of a complex problem that needs to be solved, and the utility definitely needs to play a role, but we need to come up with the right models for ownership and maintenance of these microgrids for this to work.
Because in that example of somebody trying to power their own home, it's probably pretty unlikely, if you're here in a big metropolitan area, that you're going to be completely off the grid, right? And working just with a micro. So that's where you have to orchestrate things with, in this case, We Energies.
You would think so, actually, about your question. So you probably heard about the news, PGE cutting customers.
Yeah, 502
million customer.
Because of the
and
threat
customers
of,
because of threat of wildfire. That's another application for microgrid. Mm-hmm. So now, actually, I read a piece in New York Times that was saying that a lot of people who install solar PV on their houses now understand that grid is not there. They cannot use the solar PV. So microgrid is a solution to that. So if you have solar PV, if you have energy storage, that becomes the smallest microgrid that you can have. You can add more if there are more power demand in there. So it could happen that, like in urban area, you could lose power for any reason. I mean, fire would be one, weather event would be another. But microgrids are not only for reliability. Here, in that specific case, you probably would be willing to pay more than you would pay you for a utility rate to have your power, right? Yeah. You don't want to lose power. But there are opportunities to have more efficient system. You reduce your rate, electrical power rate, and those all together you can combine and then come up solution for any specific customer, a specific case.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujak, and joining us in the studio are two members of the Electrical Engineering Department at UWM's College of Engineering and Applied Sciences. Adele Nasiri is a professor, and Rob Kuzner, an associate professor in the department, and we're talking about microgrids and how that might be part, not might, but is becoming part of the future of how we tap into electricity to power all the things that we often take for granted. I'd like to talk to both of you folks about your individual research, because there are some similarities, but also some differences. I mentioned at the beginning of the program that the military is one organization that is very, very interested in what microgrids can do to help them complete their mission. And Adele, if I'm not mistaken, you're working with the Air Force. And Rob, you're on the other side. You're working with the Navy. Tell us what you're doing on behalf of the military, and how you got to be doing that work in the first place. Adele?
Right. So before that, I got to mention that Rob and I and two other faculty at UWM, we run a National Science Foundation Center. It's called Grid Connected Power Electronics Center. And we do a variety of projects every year. It's a It's a really a nice setting that we get support from National Science Foundation as well as few member companies, and every year we run projects all in energy conversion that microgrid is part of it. Then on specific projects, I did few projects with Army and Air Force, and most of them were on microgrids. And initially, we were talking how you build microgrid for a military site and what are the components, how you can provide power, a stable power. This latest project, it's actually a test bed. It's for electrical and water. Now, you can expand the boundary of microgrid to include water system as well, because water system needs electrical energy to operate. They need pumps, they need water that reverse osmosis system that produces brine water and so forth, and they are really energy intensive devices. So looking at all this system and how we can have a smart system that we can look at the data from all these electrical and water systems, and then we can get those data into a data analytics platform, and from there, store it in the cloud. And then we go and look at the stream of data and see how we can design the systems better, both in real time as well as post-processing, that you look at all this data and you see how you can change your design. So it is really an interesting project that covers both water and electrical energy.
That's really amazing. I mean, you're really moving then towards a state of self-sufficiency that is probably the gold standard for the military. Rob, how about your work?
Yeah, well, I come to this I joined the university 5 years ago, and before that I worked for 21 years building, developing equipment for Navy ships, and really specifically for the electrification of Navy ships. I worked for Eaton Corporation and DRS, Leonardo DRS. And what the Navy, if you think about a Navy ship, it's like a floating city that has to have its own electrical power. It has its own local power distribution, and it can be a fairly weak grid, actually, and so they have multiple sources. And you have to control very carefully this energy distribution within the ship. And on top of it, you have threats, specific threats that can happen. And so what I've worked on, and now I'm continuing to work on this with the Navy, is how do we have future ships that are more efficient and that have more precise electrified weapons? And these have to be resilient, and they have to be survivable. So a lot of my perspective is on how do you reconfigure and redistribute all the energy in the grid when something bad happens and keep it alive. That's a lot of the focus with the Navy ships. And then on the other side, I have funding from another branch of the Navy working on land-based microgrids. And the Navy has a great interest in trying to deploy the lessons that they're learning about microgrids to the public, to the general public. And so that's the main focus of this project. And they are also installing microgrids in a number of Navy bases worldwide. So the main focus of that research is on how do we best architect and deploy the equipment to make the system resilient and cost-effective and efficient?
Really interesting that you said the Navy is really interested in seeing what they develop for their service to be available or applicable to the general public at large. Why is that? You'd think that it would be proprietary and that they would, you know, want to keep this top secret.
Tom, that has been a tradition, I think, with military, with NASA, with a lot of governmental agencies, that when they develop something, a product, you know, you could probably have a lot of examples from what the work that NASA has done, or you know, military, that they come into the commercial market and they become products.
I suppose we wouldn't have Velcro tape, right, if the military didn't go ahead and share what they learned.
Right.
In terms of the competitiveness in this area, where does the U.S. stand? Is our country leading the pack when it comes to microgrid development, or are there others who are ahead of us?
I think that I would not consider us leading the pack. It's a bit of a challenge here because the utility is definitely a big part of it, but the utilities in the U.S. own the grid and they own the generation, and so the microgrid is really an extension of the electrical grid part of that. So, like in Europe, they have the operators of the grid in many parts are separate from the owners of the generation. And so there's a lot more opportunity to develop ideas for distributing the power to people. That's one example. Now, the other thing about residential microgrid, the greatest work happening in that area is actually happening in third world nations, at places where they don't have electricity for everyone, or it's not reliable, or they can't get the electrical power to remote villages. And a lot of this is happening in India. So there actually is a lot of advancement in residential microgrids that are DC powered, where to power up small villages and groups of homes in very remote areas.
So we, in a sense, were the victims of our own success because we have such a reliable general electrical grid.
Right. Let me just tell you where the idea of microgrid is going, really, where the research is at after just making the technology mature. I think there are three major topics that is still research for microgrid. One is the idea of DC microgrid. Microgrid has been AC, the alternating current, and direct current is inherently more efficient because most of the load that we use are DC. So one idea is that you would have this hybrid system of DC and AC, so you have more efficient system. The second would be that you would combine electrical system with thermal and water. Just have a complete solution, which really is a more efficient solution for all three elements. And the third one is just make it smart. So with the whole idea, you know, the work that we are doing in Connected Systems Institute and how you can get the data, how you can analyze it at multi-level, at the device level, like go at the higher level and then take it to cloud and do all this streaming analytics, everything like that. So all these three elements are great. And I think U.S. is leading, really, in a lot of those areas. D.C. may be an issue, you know, in Europe country, a lot of universities in Europe, they do better research on D.C., and they are even looking at completely D.C. electric grid. In U.S., there is a difference. We have cheap natural gas that it doesn't exist in the U.S., in Europe. So when you have cheap natural gas generators are AC, alternating current. So now you have to have a mix because wind and solar PV energy storage, these sources all are DC. So you can have DC and then you can have DC load. But when you bring in natural gas, things change. Now you need to have AC as well. So there is some differences between what we do and what others are doing.
And let me clarify something, too. Adele and I kind of come at this from two different perspectives. And Adele is more looking at it, and he's the way he's describing it is starting at the system level and working downward. And my perspective has generally been from working from the bottoms up. And so this would be why I characterized the progress in these two areas. So I think if you look at the technology, the research, the equipment that's being built for microgrids, the United States is really leading, okay, in this area. But the deployment of bottoms-up microgrids, we're not. That's happening more in other countries.
Where the need is the greatest.
Where the need is the greatest.
Yeah.
And yeah, exactly. So I think there are really two different perspectives. And I've come at this from the perspective of, if we look at the residential microgrid, how can we look at electricity as a basic human right? That's basically how it's really gained traction overseas. But here, you know, we have a different type of energy poverty going on. We have people who can't afford to pay their energy bills because it's such a huge percentage of their bill. And so I've looked at the microgrid as a solution there. But that's more of a bottoms-up approach, and it requires development of a whole group of stakeholders that don't really exist at this time.
You both have mentioned the utility and how critical it is to find a way to integrate these microgrids into the broader system that is operated by utilities. How receptive are they to this new technology?
You know, to be frank, I think initially utility companies saw this as a competing entity, so that you would generate your own power, and then, of course, you wouldn't pay electric bill. But I think now there is more openness to the fact of that utility-owned microgrids, or microgrids that you develop, but they work hand-in-hand with utility, and they export power, they import power, they support the utility, get support from utility. And then if it's utility-owned, it's even better that, you know, you can have customer get the energy efficiency and the low cost, and then it's owned by utility and works with the utility. But it really, there are utility companies which are really at the front end of this. And there are still some that, of course, are waiting.
And it's preferable to residential solar and things like that because it can be controlled and interactive for them.
Well, fascinating conversation, gentlemen. I want to go out and get one of these for my house. I know that's probably somewhere a little bit farther down the road, but wouldn't it be nice to have that redundancy and knowing that you're adding to sustainability at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Great conversation, and we'll look forward to having you back as we see continued advances in the world of microgrids. Adele Nasiri and Rob Kuzner, both part of UWM's Electrical Engineering Department at the College of Engineering and Applied Sciences at UWM, are guests on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week. Take care, everybody. I'm Tommy Jack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.